And what better subject to talk about over your lunch than people being killed? Because we're joined in the studio by a colleague of mine from another place, writer and broadcaster, James Butler, who has written a new book entitled Killer Instinct. I've been telling him for months he should have called it Sports Greatest Killers, but he didn't listen to me. James, very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Why or what was the inspiration behind writing a book about people killing other people?
Well, just to go back a step, you are in the intro. There is a reference to your your tongue-in-cheek comments about calling it something else. But it's not a book I wanted to make out was glorifying the act of murder, because it's a bad thing, kids. Don't murder anybody today. Save it till tomorrow, no. But the inspiration came from the Oscar Pistorius stuff. I'd spent a bit of time in South Africa covering the cricket. Yorkshire out there in the Champions League at the end of 2012. And came back and got a little bit of an affinity. When you visit somewhere and you stay a while, you get a bit of an affinity with the place. And so when the Pistorius thing came up, I was quite interested. And I've always liked sport. That's why I became a sports journalist. But I also like crime and crime thrillers and all that kind of stuff. So got quite hooked on the Pistorius stuff. And his case was different in that it was did he or didn't he kind of stuff. There wasn't any actual real proof. It was his word, and whether you believed him or not. So it's quite an interesting case in itself. And then one afternoon, I was a little bit at a loose end, and I Googled myself.
Which is something you should never do.
As you do. And James Butler came up as... my name's got two T's in it. James Butler, the super middleweight boxer from America, has one T in his name, but he came up first, which dented my ego a tad. But he'd been found guilty of murdering one of his friends, a guy called Sam Kellerman, who was a boxing journalist. And started to kind of think, well, it's Pistorius, there's my namesake. Off the back of the Pistorius stuff, a lot of people did. And he's not the only person that's been a naughty boy. There's others as well. So kind of catalogued a few together and realised that, yeah, there's potentially a book in this. And ultimately there is. It sat on the table in front of me, 29 killers in there. And they've all come from all sorts of different walks of life, different sports, from all sorts of different places around the world. But the one thing they have, well, two things they have in common. They were very good at sport and professional sports people. And they've also taken at least one life. There's, in fact, one of them has taken seven in there. He's a class as a serial killer. But I think the interesting thing about it all was that it... obviously, being interested in sport, it was nice for me to be able to look at some other different sports. I mean, there's anything in there from skateboarding and sumo wrestling to American sports and all kinds of things. But to see the kind of pressures that sports people, the psychology of it all, sports people have to cope with quite a lot on the pitch, and only the very best can tackle the really, you know, standing on the 18th fairway, having to get down in two to win the Open or something, certain pressures on that. But in a wider world, we all have different pressures on us, and some people are able to cope with them more than others. And the guys in this book, for various reasons, didn't cope very well.
when you're researching these people and obviously writing their stories up, do you feel a bit of sympathy for them? Do you feel hatred for them? How do you feel when you're looking into these various different people?
When I started doing the project, I assumed that I would actually think that they were all nasty, mean creatures that deserved to, you know, rot in prison. But I think there are certainly, of the 29 in there, there's a lot that are in that category that are just nasty pieces of work. But I think there's also a number in there who, if you get past the fact that they committed a horrendous crime, which cannot be excused in any shape or form, you can sympathise a little bit with some of their stories. Because, I mean, I've spoken to you before about American sportsmen who've had, they call it CTE, which is a term for kind of head trauma, and it can only actually be diagnosed at post-mortem.
Yes,
you can't
yes.
actually officially diagnose it when somebody's alive, but basically having sustained head trauma, if you're an American footballer like Jovan Belcher that's in the book, the wrestler that's in there, Chris Benoit, they basically, because they had their heads beaten around so often, it changed their characters and changed their personalities, made them prone to mood swings, violent tempers, aggression, when beforehand they were quite mild-mannered creatures that were just good at sport. And I think you can read some of those stories and think, well, that was external influences that got them into that situation. What they did was horrible, but you can sympathise a little bit from that. There's a guy in there, I mean, we're in the middle of the Rugby World Cup at the moment, and there's a rugby player from France called Marc Sicilion, who was the French captain. He played 50-odd test matches for his country. A big, towering bloke who was very well known in the Bourgogne area of France, who just couldn't actually adapt to being retired. And you see a lot of stories of sportsmen who their identity is their sport and their success on the pitch. They get heralded and paid and all the rest of it. And when it finishes, they, instead of being referred to as Fred, who is the amazing footballer, they're referred to as Fred, the ex, or the former, or the person that used to be. And all of a sudden, their identity changes completely. And Marc Sicilion, that's not Fred, the actual, but he hasn't killed anybody, no, the real Fred, the Brazilian. Marc Sicilion just basically collapsed a little bit after he retired. He struggled to find a role in the world. He started drinking a lot, changed his character again, and ended up walking into an end-of-season party in France, where a number of rugby teams were celebrating the end of the season. Rugby players are quite well known for celebrating in big style.
Yes, this is true.
But Sicilion had been drinking all afternoon, walked in to collect his wife because he wanted her to go home with him. She said, no, I'm enjoying myself, I'm staying here. He came back an hour later with a shotgun and basically put three bullets in her and woke up with a horrendous hangover the next morning in a prison cell in France, screaming his wife's name, saying, where are you, come and get me. He hadn't realised that he'd done it.
Right.
So, yeah, and his life in that moment changed dramatically, and I think you can have a little bit of sympathy for people like that who basically one moment of madness and all of a sudden their life is a completely different entity. But yeah, again, it was a horrible thing he did.
So far then, this is sounding quite depressing and dark. Are there any can there be happier moments in a book which is about people murdering?
Well, what I've tried to do with everybody that's in there is not just concentrate on the crime they committed. They're all people who enjoyed sporting success. So there's a number of stories of success in sport in there as well. A number of quite funny stories about their lives and you know, outside of the sporting environment. And then ultimately the fact that they fell from grace. But, you know, the fact that they're in there is that they rose in the first place. So there are stories of success and stories of sporting success. But the one I like the best is there's an Argentinian boxer called Carlos Monzon who's in there. He was world champion and probably boxed above his weight in inverted commas, because he wasn't ever thought of as a youngster as being a star boxer, but he basically made himself into a mean machine, won the world title, kept hold of it for a while, and was the George Best of Argentinian boxing, basically. He had a very bright and breezy social life. He had all of the glamorous women on his arm. He ended up starring in films and all sorts of different things. So he had a life that would be the envy of most people listening to this programme. But he obviously ended up in prison for the murder he committed. But the reason I like this guy, I was never a big fan of Mickey Rourke, the actor.
Yes.
He always struck me as being a bit of a insert your own word. And he found himself filming in Argentina, and he'd starred in a boxing film, and he'd taken up boxing as a professional, in inverted commas. Not that great at it, but saw himself as being a bit of a sportsman and decided he wanted to go and meet one of his heroes, Carlos Monzon, in prison. So he visited him in the prison and shared an hour or two of chatting boxing as if he was on an equal terms with this previous world champion. Carlos Monzon was probably there in the corner rolling his eyes thinking, who is this Burke? But in the end, Mickey Rourke persuaded Monzon to spar with him. Bearing in mind, Monzon had been in prison for a while at this time. He'd used the prison gym but hadn't done any serious fighting for a long time. Mickey Rourke had his film crew with him. They went into the prison gym. There was a boxing ring there. Started sparring. I don't think Mickey Rourke had actually thrown a punch when Monzon threw a right hook and put him on his backside. I don't think Mickey Rourke didn't get up for a while. And the film crew that was with him that had recorded all of this for Mickey Rourke's documentary he was trying to make, and basically ended up selling it selling the footage of Mickey Rourke, the hero, being floored by Carlos Monsoon. And, yeah, a bit of indignity for the film star. But, you know, I think it showed that Carlos Monsoon, despite the fact that he hasn't boxed for a while, still had it. And that was why he was a world champion, and why a lot of us who dabbled in playing at sport at school and stuff realise when you actually get close to a professional sportsman, you realise just how good they are.
Obviously, the Oscar Pistorius trial is still ongoing to an extent, but in terms of the others, you've written about 29 different sports people who committed horrific crimes. Are they all guilty? Are some of them perhaps innocent?
There's a few actually in the book. I mean, if you ever watch The Shawshank Redemption, which is one of my favourite films, there's a famous line in there where everybody's innocent, kind of thing, because everybody's. You know, everybody professes their innocence. There's a few in the book that can't really profess it, like Sicilian, who I talked about, who shot his wife in front of many, many witnesses at a party. But I think that one of the chapters that was actually the hardest to write, in a way, was because there's so much information on it, was the chapter about Reuben Hurricane Carter. And anybody that doesn't know who Reuben Hurricane Carter was, he was a boxer in the 60s who was pretty decent, but nothing special. He'd won a few fights and was well thought about in the local area. But he, in 1966, a couple of black gunmen burst into a Lafayette bar, called the Lafayette Bar in New Jersey, opened fire on the four people in there, killed three of them, and seriously injured the fourth. And it was a period, obviously, in American history where black people were kind of almost guilty before they'd done anything. And they pulled over Reuben Carter shortly after the crime, because he was basically the supposedly two people in this car. The witness had said there were two people running from the bar. They took him in, and he was banged up. To cut a long story short, read the rest of the book, and you'll find the longer story. He spent a long time in prison professing his innocence. A lot of Canadian do-gooders and a young lad basically latched onto his case and helped him, and he ended up being released on a technicality from some of the evidence that was given at the original trial. And he kind of set himself up as being almost like the Nelson Mandela of boxing. He toured around, he gave speeches, he set up these charities to help people that were innocent, and lived his last years on the planet as being, as I say, like a Nelson Mandela figure, a celebrity figure, because of he'd been wronged. But if you actually kind of... So I watched the film first. I listened to the Bob Dylan song. And if you listen to the Bob Dylan lyrics, they're all... I mean, Bob Dylan was a man that was... He liked a cause. And he picked on the Reuben Carter as a cause. And it's tosh, basically. Because if you actually read behind the story, Reuben Carter was a career criminal. He'd been in trouble from a kid. He has all the traits of a psychopath. In that there's a checklist, actually. I've read another book, which is by a guy called John Ronson, which is about psychopaths, and there's a hair checklist. And if you've got, if you score 30 out of 40 or more on this checklist, you're a psychopath. And in the book, Ronson actually says that if you actually think you're a psychopath after reading the book, you're probably not, because psychopaths actually wouldn't recognise it in themselves. But yeah, it's the ability to kind of use your charisma to manipulate other people and all sorts of different things. And Reuben Carter, to me, was your bona fide psychopath. He just basically was a nasty piece of work who made himself out to look like he was an innocent person. I mean, Bob Dylan, who wrote the song Hurricane, which is one of his most famous songs, very good tune, ended up not performing that live because he was on the cause. When Carter was actually released on bail pending his third trial, which never actually happened, he beats up one of the people that was running his charity in a hotel room and knocked her senseless. And at that time, he started getting bad press, and a lot of the celebrities, Muhammad Ali was a celebrity that was behind him, and all sorts of different people were behind him, started to withdraw a little bit and get away from the kind of the bad smell that was there. And Reuben Carter, to me, of anybody in there, is somebody who actually was never actually shown as being... Nobody ever stood up in court and said, you are innocent, you're free to go. It was a technicality that let him out. And in the reverse of your question, really, he's somebody that was actually ultimately said to be innocent, or certainly portrayed himself as being innocent, who I think was as guilty as sin.
Obviously this book, we wish you great success with. What are you working on next?
I've got a couple of projects, actually. I did a book in 2012, which was a Yorkshire Cricket On This Day in History book, which, bearing in mind, it's the last day of the cricket season today. They've had a very good season again, and as they did last year, I think it's probably a good time to just put a few more dates of success in there and maybe revise that one. And there's a fiction book that's at the back of my head at the moment, which I'd like to do, because fiction's a love of mine, and it's kind of traditional crime thriller. And also there's a book in my head which has actually started to become a bit more reality now, which is about sporting families and the psychology and the rivalries and the relationships within sporting families. You've got the Brownie brothers, the Williams sisters, who are siblings, and you've got sportsmen that have famous fathers or mothers who are maybe, I mean, you're talking about Yorkshire cricket, you've got Johnny Bairstow and Ryan Sidebottom playing up the road as we speak, who had David Bairstow and Arnie Sidebottom as their fathers, and kind of the dynamics of that, because I was actually working at the club when Johnny came through, and he was a young man who had that famous surname in Yorkshire cricket, which does give a burden of expectation and a different kind of, to any other youngster. I mean, Joe Root came through at roughly the same time with none of that on his shoulders. And I think it does lead a different dynamic. And I actually genuinely want to ask a question. I'd love to get the Williams sisters sat in front of me and say, right, Venus, you're a very good tennis player. There's plenty of tennis players out there that are growing up at the moment who would love to have your record in Grand Slams and your career, but you're not even the best tennis player in your family. Are you jealous? And that, something along those lines, because I'm sure there must have been times when she sat in the box watching her sister pick up a trophy, thinking, that should be me. And the smile can't always have been completely genuine. She'll never answer that question, honestly, I'm sure, but I'd love to get the opportunity to ask it.
Go on then, James, what's the book called and where can we get it?
It's called Killer Instinct, The Trials and Tales of Murderous Sports Stars, and it's available on sale as we speak on Amazon. And if you search for either Killer Instinct or you search for Butler, and remember it's got two T's in it, Butler, it'll crop up and you can add it to your basket. In fact, you can add more than one to your basket if you get carried away. Christmas presents, all that kind of stuff.
James Butler, author of Killer Instinct, thank you very much for your time, and I shall see you again soon.
Pleasure.